Welcome to Prompted, the podcast where we spark imagination one writing prompt at a time. My name is Eric, and I'll be your host on this journey of creative exploration, where the boundaries between words and imagination blur. New episodes of Prompted will be released every Monday, so be sure to tune in each week for fresh inspiration. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, or you can listen directly from our website, thepromptedpodcast.org. In each episode, I explore creative writing through in-depth discussions in our deep dive segments. I will also feature my own original poetry and other writing inspired by the writing prompts from the previous week. And to keep it going, I'll share a new writing prompt at the end for you to try. I'd love to see what you're working on. Share your writing with me using the hashtag #PromptedPodcast on Blue Sky. I'm always eager to connect with listeners and hear how the prompts are inspiring you. So, without further ado, let's dive into today's creative writing journey. This week on Prompted, we're going to explore one of my favorite topics in writing, metaphors. Metaphors are an essential tool for any writer looking to add depth, emotion, and create vivid descriptions that bring our stories to life. But what exactly is a metaphor? Well, at its core, a metaphor is a comparison between two unlike things. For example, when we say, "He's a lion on the battlefield," we're not saying he's literally a lion, but rather that he possesses some of the same qualities we associate with lions: courage, strength, and ferocity. Metaphors help us convey complex ideas in a way that's both elegant and memorable. In this episode, we'll be diving deep into the world of metaphors, exploring how they're used in poetry, fiction, and everyday language. My goal is not only to educate you on the basics of metaphors, but also to inspire you to experiment with using them in your own writing. Whether you are a seasoned author or just starting out, I believe that metaphors have the power to transform your writing and connect with your readers on a deeper level. The power of metaphors. Now that we've got a basic understanding of what a metaphor is, let's take a closer look at the different ways they show up in our writing and why they're such powerful little shapeshifters. One of the most common types is the direct metaphor. This is where we clearly state that one thing is another. He's a lion on the battlefield. Simple, right? It creates an immediate image. We don't need a whole paragraph to explain what he's like. We feel it in one line. That's the magic of a well-placed metaphor. It distills a big idea into something sharp and vivid. Then we've got the implied metaphor. This one's a bit sneakier. Instead of stating the comparison outright, it hints at it through action or description. She barked orders at her team. There's no dog mentioned, but you can hear it, right? The tone, the sharpness, the command, it's all packed into that single word, barked. And then there's one of my favorites, the extended metaphor. This is when you take a metaphor and stretch it out across a few lines, maybe even an entire scene or a story. Let's say you describe grief as the ocean. It pulls you under when you least expect it. Some days you're floating. Some days you're drowning. This kind of metaphor invites your reader to sit in the feeling, not just glimpse it. It's immersive, emotional, it sticks. Now, sometimes people talk about literal metaphors, and I want to pause on that real quick because it's a little misleading. If it's literal, it's not a metaphor anymore. Metaphors are figurative by definition. That's what gives them their power. They make the abstract feel concrete. So when we say the city is a beast, we don't mean the city is covered in fur and fangs, But we do mean it's wild, unpredictable, maybe dangerous, maybe beautiful, maybe both. Metaphors help us move beyond surface-level description. Instead of saying she's sad, we might write, she wore sorrow like a second skin. Now the emotion isn't just stated, it's embodied. We can see it, maybe even feel it. And that's why metaphors matter. They're not just stylistic flourishes. They're bridges between writer and reader, between feeling and understanding. They say what plain language can't. They invite the reader to make a leap with us. And when they land just right, they stay with us long after the page. Metaphors in storytelling. So now that we've looked at the power of metaphors and how they work, let's talk about where they really come alive in storytelling. Metaphors aren't just a line here or there to spice things up. In stories, they can do some serious heavy lifting. They can shape characters, reinforce themes, even become the silent architecture behind an entire plot. Let's start with characters. When we say something like, she was a ticking clock in a quiet room, we're not just giving a poetic description. We're telling you something vital about who she is. She's on edge, maybe dangerous, maybe just deeply anxious. That metaphor wraps her whole energy in one image and sets the tone for every scene she's in. A good metaphor doesn't just decorate a moment, it deepens it. You'll see this a lot in character arcs too. Think about transformation stories. You might start with a character described as a ghost in their own life, and by the end, they're a wildfire finally burning through the silence. Neither image is literal, but taken together, they chart emotional growth in a way that feels real. And often, you can track a story's emotional core just by looking at how the metaphors evolve. Then there's theme. Some stories use central metaphors that echo again and again, like a thread running through the entire piece. Maybe a story about isolation uses cold imagery. His words were frost, her silences ice. Then later, when connection happens, she thawed in the sun of his kindness. It's not just pretty language, it's emotional storytelling. That kind of metaphor becomes the heartbeat of the narrative. And sometimes metaphors even sneak into the structure. Say you're telling a story where time loops back on itself. The metaphor might be a spiral, a snake eating its tail, the ocean tide. You might not ever say it outright, but it can influence how the scenes unfold, how the reader feels the rhythm of the story. So when you're writing fiction, metaphors aren't just useful, they're transformative. They help you say more with less. They create resonance, emotional impact, and cohesion. And when they land well, they linger long after the story ends. Metaphors in poetry. In poetry, metaphors take center stage. They're not just there to clarify, they're there to evoke, to suggest, to surprise, sometimes even to confuse in just the right way. Take a poem that opens with, "Grief is a house with no doors." Immediately we're inside it, trapped, still, echoing. That metaphor does more than describe grief, it becomes it. And poetry doesn't shy away from strange or surreal metaphors either. In fact, it thrives on them. My thoughts are birds drunk on wind. You don't have to know exactly what that means to feel it. Poetry trusts the reader to meet the metaphor halfway. It invites interpretation. And that's the beauty of it. Metaphors in poetry are less about precision and more about resonance. They don't always define a feeling. They approximate it. They circle around it. They let the reader get there emotionally, even if the logic is a little slippery. Sometimes poets will build entire pieces around a single metaphor. That's when you get something like an extended metaphor that never lets go, like a love poem that compares relationship to a decaying orchard, or a breakup described as the unraveling of a red sweater. Everything in the poem serves that central image, that setting, the rhythm, the diction. It's like putting the whole piece inside a metaphor-shaped container and letting the idea expand to fill every corner. And honestly, sometimes the best metaphors are the ones that don't feel perfect. The ones that leave a little gap, where the reader has to step in and make the connection for themselves. That little leap, that moment of, oh, that's where the emotional punch hits. So whether your poem is sharp and structured or loose and wild, a metaphor is one of the best tools you have to carve depth into your lines, to make the intangible felt. So to bring this all together, metaphors aren't just a writer's flourish or a poetic trick. They're how we make sense of the world, how we give shape to the unspoken. Whether you're writing fiction, poetry, or even just journaling your thoughts, metaphors help us get closer to the truth of a thing, not by explaining it, but by showing it through something else. They let us say, this is like that, and in doing so, invite the reader to feel something real. From the battlefield lines to the grief-shaped houses, to cities turned into beasts and time bent into spirals, metaphors allow us to cross the distance between emotion and understanding. They connect us. They stay with us. And more than anything, they give us the permission to be bold, to be strange, to lean into imagery that doesn't always make literal sense, but makes emotional sense. Whether you're just starting out or you've been writing for years, keep experimenting with the metaphors. Let your language wander. Let your comparisons surprise even you. That's where the good stuff lives. Now, let's dive into some brand new, freshly crafted microtales that have been simmering in my creative cauldron. These three original microfiction pieces are the result of some excellent writing prompts for the last week or so. I hope you enjoy. The first microfiction piece comes from the word prompt, joy. I may have gone a little overboard with the metaphor game on this one, but the result was an excellent workout for my creative muscles. The metaphors not only carry the theme, but breathe energy into the piece itself. I called this story The Last Dealer. The city cracked like a tooth under a flickering street lamp sky. Neon signs sputtered above storefronts selling distractions by the gram. VR nostalgia, kiss for rent androids, bureaucratic apathy wrapped in recycled optimism. I moved through it like a rumor, collar up, boots slick with alley grease and last night's sins. People didn't feel anymore. Not really. Emotion was a liability. Got in the way of progress. Made the gears grind. The suits outlawed it decades ago. Replaced it with designer contentment. The kind that didn't leave scars or start revolutions. But something was still moving in the cracks. A pulse. A whisper. They called her Echo, or Velvet, or sometimes nothing at all. Just a scent in the wind, burnt honey and jasmine cigarettes. No one could agree on her face, but everyone remembered the aftermath. Color bleeding back into things, laughter with teeth, a heartbeat like thunder in a quiet church. I found her on a Thursday, behind a condemned theater. She leaned against the brick like she owned it, like it was just another ex-lover. Leather coat, eyes like melted film reels. She didn't speak, just raised an eyebrow, and I knew she was the one. I said, "I want it." She smiled, slow as sin. "You sure?" I nodded, too tired to lie, too hungry to care. She reached into her coat, pulled out a vial the size of a bullet. Inside, something golden and alive. It shimmered like static, like memory, like everything I'd ever wanted and forgotten. "Last one," she said. "Take it, and there's no going back." I didn't ask what it was. You don't ask the executioner what kind of rope they use. I took the hit, and the world detonated. Not like a bomb, not pain, not fear. Something else, something primal. It hit me in the chest like a childhood song, like warm hands in winter, like driving too fast with the windows down and no one waiting at home. I felt it. Not the fake stuff, not simulation, the raw, incandescent scream of being alive. The joy that comes before language, the joy that burns cities down because it refuses to stay small. I laughed, loud, ugly, free. She watched, unmoved, like she'd seen it 100 times, and she handed me her coat. "It's yours now," she said. "I'm done." "What?" I stammered. "Why me?" She leaned in close, voice as soft as a needle drop. "Because joy is dangerous. It's fire. And the world's forgotten how to burn. But you remember now." Then she was gone, folded into the fog like a cigarette dream. And I stood there in her place, heart pounding, coat heavy on my shoulders, the last dealer in a city built on numb. People started coming, broken ones, hollow ones, hungry. I didn't speak, just looked at them, and waited for the next one to say, "I want it." The second microfiction piece was inspired by a writing prompt with a twist. 3 evocative words. Tempered, whiskey, skies. But with one specific rule. I couldn't use a single one of them in the actual piece. Instead, I had to let their essence bleed through, using metaphors to weave the emotional heart of the story. Metaphors can turn something as simple as a moment or a feeling into a reflection of something much larger, giving it weight, depth, and resonance. His breath reeked of old sins and cheap promises. She laughed like gunmetal in rain. They danced under bruised horizons, skin glazed with yesterday's fire. Then she stole his knife, kissed him hard, and vanished into the heat like a ghost on fire. The last microfiction piece came from the word prompt, noise. I was drawn to the idea of internal interference, how the world doesn't have to scream to be deafening. Sometimes it's the hum of the everyday that wears you down. They said the implant would help. Clearer thoughts, sharper focus. Now the fridge hums secrets, the sidewalk whispers my name, and someone's jamming noise into my skull like it's a broadcast. I'm out here naked, screaming at satellites, trying to remember what silence used to sound like. Let's turn our attention to some original poetry that I'm excited to share. Here are 3 poems that are a result of fantastic writing prompts over the last week or so.
each one a unique reflection of the creative sparks that have ignited within me.
The first poem came from the word prompt, hindsight. A simple word, but one that opens a trapdoor straight into memory, regret, revelation, the whole bloody mess of looking back. I call this poem, The Devil in the Rear View. I kissed the fuse, called the blast love, slept in the wreckage. She moved like smoke, left burn prints. Time gnawed my ankles while I painted quicksand. Youth hung like rust, the bottle whispered with broken teeth. My past? Not a story. A mouth still chewing. Regret grows sweet, then strangles. Hindsight, a butcher in silk gloves, grinning. The second poem comes from the word prompt, piety. That's P-I-E-T-Y. But not the kind that wears robes or whispers in pews. This piece is about a different form of devotion, the daily ritual of staying real in a world that keeps trying to sand down your edges. I call this poem Grain Against Grain, a gritty kind of loyalty to self. He built a house out of loaded questions and called it love. I learned to sleep with thunder in my throat and silence between my teeth. My spine became a protest sign he couldn't tear down. I wasn't raised, I was sanded. But the grain fought back. Now I wear my damage like a custom jacket, stitched in panic, lined in rage. This world wants soft shapes. I come with corners. I don't kneel. I recalibrate. Call it piety if you must. This ritual of staying unflattened. The third poem comes from the word prompt, pride. I was inspired by the tension between power and vulnerability. How someone can reflect back a part of you you've been denying, and how reclaiming yourself can sometimes look like destruction from the outside. She fed me cherries soaked in gasoline and said, "Let it burn if you ever loved yourself that much again." Her pride wasn't a weapon, it was a boundary, a warning, a mirror. I thought she was fire meant to hurt me, but she was fire meant to teach me how not to disappear. I'm excited to share my own take on the writing prompt from episode 8, which was a concept of the Department of Lost Things. So without further ado, here is my poetic response. Velvet floors swallow your step. Keys rattle, no doors remain. Clerks file your breath in shadowed drawers. A candle drips wax like fallen teeth. You ask for the way out. They hand you a mirror. Now that we've set the mood, let's see what else got misplaced along the way. Here's a little fiction set in the same strange corridors of the Department of Lost Things. At the Department of Lost Things, he asked for his appetite for chaos. The clerk barely looked up, thumbing through a ledger stained with dreams. "Aisle 13," he said, "past the unpaid debts and pickled ambitions." He walked the row, past jars of laughter sealed tight, found his appetite curled in a broken compass, still warm, still hungry, still pointing nowhere at all. I hope you enjoyed those. Now, for this week's writing prompt, we have the word snark, S-N-A-R-K, snark. As always, I invite you to share your prompt response with me on Blue Sky using the hashtag PromptedPodcast, and I'll feature a few random submissions in the next episode. Thank you for listening to another episode of Prompted, where we spark imagination one writing prompt at a time. Be sure to tune in each week for fresh inspiration. You can subscribe on our website, theprompted.podcast.org, or find us on your favorite podcast platform.